Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Digital Q1 Financial Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, you'll need to press the one followed by the four on your push-button phone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Nikki Richardson for Digital Equipment Corporation. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Good morning and welcome to Digital's Q1 Financial Results Teleconference. With me this morning are Digital's President, Bob Palmer, and our CFO, Vin Mullarkey. As in past conferences, the format for the call will be short presentations by Bob and Vin, followed by a question-and-answer period. Please remember our time constraint this morning and limit your questions to one question with a related follow-up so that everyone who wants to can participate. Now let me turn the call over to Bob.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. This morning, I would like to give you a brief overview of our first quarter results before Vin discusses them in more detail, and then we will take your questions. Overall, we reported a net loss of $131 million, or $0.98 per common share, compared with a net loss of $154 million, or $1.14 per common share for the same period last year. Although we're not satisfied with any loss, we do see many significant and encouraging signs that make us increasingly confident in our plans to achieve sustained profitability. For example, our total operating revenues for the quarter were up nearly 4% to $3.1 billion. Product revenues grew 6%, and service revenues also improved 1% from the similar period last year. We experienced strong product order growth this quarter, which represents the third consecutive quarter of year-over-year product order growth. This is the first time in 6 years that Digital has experienced three consecutive quarters of order rate growth. We saw order rate growth in all of our major geographies, including strong growth in the Asia-Pacific operations and moderate growth in the United States and Europe. Our Alpha AXP revenue more than doubled year-over-year and now represents more than 60% of system sales, excluding PCs. We're experiencing strong acceptance of our Digital 2100 server in new markets, particularly for Unix applications. These are all very welcome signs that our focus on customer needs and our core strengths is beginning to pay off. Of course, we will continue to implement aggressive cost reductions necessary to bring the company's cost structure in line with our new business model, as we have previously discussed. The reduction of 4,000 regular employees during the first quarter and 15,000 since Q1 of last year is a necessary and significant step toward an improved cost structure. But we need to do more. As I indicated in July, continued reductions in populations and costs remain ahead. Our cost reduction actions are integrated with the company's strategic plan to increase our sales through indirect channels, reduce overhead costs across the company, and divest non-strategic activities. Also, I am encouraged by the positive signs of our continuing dismantling of the company's cumbersome matrix management system. The renewed focus, autonomy, and accountability that I am seeing in the business units is evidenced by the speed in decision-making, the decisive actions taken on divestments, and the improved time to market for our products and services. I am confident that we are on the right track toward building a vital, energized, and profitable Digital Equipment Corporation. Now, I would like to turn the call over to Vin Mullarkey, our Chief Financial Officer, who will provide you with more details about the first quarter's financial results. Vin?
Good morning. I'll amplify several of the key points that Bob made, beginning with revenues. In addition to the continued significant growth in Alpha AXP products, our PC business continued to grow significantly during the first quarter. Additionally, our StorageWorks systems also did well, having more than doubled on a year-over-year basis. Network component product sales also performed well in the quarter with solid growth. Relative to service revenues, the declines we experienced over the last year are beginning to show signs of stabilizing. We are particularly pleased with our revenue improvements in third-party maintenance, network integration systems, as well as systems integration. I'm pleased that the gross margin improvement programs that our business units have developed over the last couple of quarters are beginning to have a favorable impact on gross margins. I'm particularly pleased with the year-over-year improvement in our service gross margins. Costs and margins are being kept in line despite increased competitive pressures and increased service requirements. Quarter one expense levels have improved as well. Our restructuring program is generally on plan. However, we are behind in a couple of major countries. I expect that at least half of the required fiscal 95 population reductions will occur before the end of the calendar year. Our program to shift some part of our customer base to indirect channels, thereby expanding our sales coverage, is progressing well and is on target. In quarter one, indirect sales represented 57% of product sales versus 45% on average last fiscal year. Although the loss for quarter one is disappointing, it is important to keep in mind that revenues have had a seasonable 20% decline from quarter four, while our loss has been improved in that it has reduced by nearly 20%. So again, a 20% decline that is seasonal and that it occurs virtually every quarter one, while yet an improvement on the order of 20% in profit levels. Loss levels. I'm encouraged by our quarter-end cash position of $881 million, which is well ahead of the planned position. Our asset management programs are well underway across the company. Progress is notable at this stage in both accounts receivables and reductions in capital spending. Additionally, the divestiture program for non-strategic businesses is well underway and ahead of plan. This will further strengthen the company's cash position. We will now take your questions.
Lori, would you begin polling, please?
Ladies and gentlemen, now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, you'll need to press the 1, followed by the 4 on your push-button phone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt acknowledging your request, and your questions will be polled in the order they are received. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your polling request, you may do so by pressing the 1, followed by the 3 on your push-button phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. One moment, please, for the first question. Terry Shannon from Ashland, Massachusetts, please go ahead with your question.
Good morning. This is Terry Shannon from Illuminata. I have two questions. The first, the Digital 2100 has been a runaway bestseller for the firm. As a result of this, what is the mix of Alpha workstation and server sales? In other words, have server sales increased from the 25% share they enjoyed during the prior quarter? And secondly, on the topic of marketing, 2 days ago, the Wall Street Journal ran a story about the Silicon Graphics MIPS R10,000 chipset, which isn't even in silicon yet, and how this beats the performance of the new Alpha EV5 chipset. Yesterday, Digital issued a press release reiterating Alpha's performance leadership. Is this the shape of things to come in digital marketing? In other words, are you finally adopting an aggressive war room strategy? Thank you.
Terry, this is Bob Palmer. Let me answer your second question first while Vin scrambles around to find the numbers to support an answer to your first question. You're quite right. We are going to be much more aggressive in our marketing and external communications and simply calling attention to the people that write about the industry, what our competitors are saying. If you're looking at the announcements recently of MIPS, as you mentioned, and also of the IBM Motorola announcement around PowerPC, look at what they've said. What they're really saying is 6 months to 1 year after Digital introduced first silicon on its 21164, they expect to have new generation RISC processors with two-thirds of the performance and two-thirds of the transistors that we have in our 21164. Now, it's frustrating to me in my job function that sometimes it doesn't get reported that way. So I'd like to set the record straight. It's always easy to compare what I hope to achieve a year from now with what's already shipping today, and that's what they're doing. They're saying, well, you know, some number of months next year, we'll have something that's two-thirds as good as Alpha shipping right now. I think that's unfortunate, but that is the way it's picked up. In the case of the MIPS processor, they've been more aggressive, and they're forecasting that they will have comparable performance to Alpha, but again, they haven't seen first silicon yet, as you observed. So I think in this whole area of one-upsmanship, Digital is fixed to the facts. We talk about what we actually have as opposed to what we intend to have or how we think we might have and that sort of thing. But on the advertising side, you'll see some new aggressive ads, and we're going to be more aggressive in our public relations in making sure the correct story is told.
Okay, thank you.
On your earlier, Terry, was that a, did you have a follow-up question? He's asking about workstations. On your earlier question on Elfer and workstations, the Elfer server business improved by about 10% in terms of percentage of total in the first quarter.
Okay, thank you very much.
John Wilkie from Boston, Massachusetts, please go ahead with your question.
Good morning. How much of that $200 million revenue increase is attributable to currency, Vin?
About $50 million.
Thank you.
One other point, if I may, John. It was immaterial. It was slightly favorable for the quarter.
Repeat that. I didn't hear you, sir.
The profit impact from currency was immaterial, though slightly favorable for the quarter.
Thank you.
Aaron Zether from Boston, Massachusetts, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, thanks. Could you walk me through the accounting change that resulted in the one-time gain for the quarter? And is there a way to say what the loss for the quarter would have been without the accounting change?
Let me walk you through it, and then I'll conclude with the second part of your point. First of all, the accounting change, known as FAS 115, essentially requires that securities be valued at fair market value versus cost. So there was about a $65 million revaluation of our securities. And that's what contributed to that accounting change gain. However, as it turned out, the company had sold those shares, those securities, during the course of the first quarter. So even if the accounting change didn't occur, there still would have been a gain. However, it would have been the bookkeeping on that gain would have been different. So do you understand so far?
Yeah, does that contribute to revenues then?
No, there is no revenue impact associated with that change.
Okay.
As we're putting out in the release, the company also had a one-time event associated with some write-offs of some divestitures that is occurring in the company, and that substantially offset the $65 million gain that I just referred to.
Okay. So that affects the financial position, but not the revenue line.
You'll have to repeat that.
It does not. I just want to be clear that accounting change does not affect the revenue line.
That is correct.
Can I ask how far through the 20,000 layoffs you are at this point of the layoffs you did in the recent quarter? Did they all count against the 20,000, 16,000 to go then?
About 30%.
About 30%?
Into the 20,000.
Okay. Thank you.
How far?
Michael Ellis from Boston, Massachusetts, please go with your question.
Yeah, good morning. We're wondering, Mr. Palmer, just how far along after these improved results, if you expect in the second quarter, then that you actually will achieve the profitability that you had said previously?
Well, on the goal that we have internally to achieve break even from operations at the end of this calendar year, that's a goal that I established, I believe, last May. And the objective was to ensure that every employee in Digital Equipment Corporation worldwide knew what the objective was and was working to achieve it. We are still working to achieve it. We have a lot of programs in place. But we don't actually forecast future revenues or profits as a company. I think it's very unwise because the future is unknowable, really. We're still dedicated to doing all the necessary things to get our cost structure in line so that we have the opportunity to break even from operations, as I said. I am quite confident that sometime during this fiscal year, which ends next June, we will return to sustained profitability. Whether we can achieve that in Q2 or not is uncertain. Many of the analysts that follow digital have been quite conservative and skeptical, which I think is appropriate given our recent financial performance of the last several quarters. And they really, I don't think there's any analyst that expects us, I don't remember any analyst anyway, that expects us to actually achieve that objective, but I can assure you that we are still working toward it. And so far as the quarter just ended is concerned, we are somewhat ahead of our plan.
Okay, thank you.
Liz Galassi from Boston, Massachusetts, please go with your question.
Yes, hi, Liz Galassi from Boston, from Bloomberg Business News. I would
I'd like to get back to the accounting changes, and I have a couple of questions about them. The one-time losses related to several small divestments, where on the table do those losses appear, and what was their total amount? I don't see them anywhere on the table, because when we compare the loss before the accounting changes in both years, we see it doubling year to year, which doesn't suggest such an attractive quarter. The other question I had is, what has been the sequential growth in Alpha sales from the fourth quarter?
I don't know what the table you're referring to, Liz, is the release.
Exactly, the operating results for the first quarter. And I want to know where those one-time losses.
Those one-time losses are approximately $50 million, and they are included in the SG&A line for the first quarter.
Okay.
This is not this is not a digital accounting practice. This is required by the FASB requirements and the Securities and Exchange Commission here in the United States. That loss is booked appropriately. Now, as it turns out, Liz, there is another related change here. The accounting requirements for restructuring used to be more liberal. In June, they were tightened up considerably, such that restructuring reserves were limited to employee severance and facilities activity. So previously, that $50 million that we're talking about would have been written off against a restructuring reserve. That is no longer required for this company or any other company in this country.
Okay, so now it's limited to severance and what? I'm sorry, sir?
Severance to the extent that the projected employees are within 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, real estate related activities.
Mm-hmm.
Digital, as it turns out, is the first major company to have to deploy these requirements.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in other words, that $50 million would have been put up against the $65 million had it been under previous requirements.
Essentially, yes.
Is the $50 million pre-tax and the $65 after-tax, however?
There is no tax impact on either.
Okay, no tax impact. So we are comparing apples to apples.
That's correct.
Okay. I have another question on last year's accounting change. We reported last year an accounting gain of $20 million or 14 cents, bringing the net loss to $83 million or 62 cents. How did we get to 51?
I don't remember. Why don't we work that offline, Liz? I don't have the quarter one data of a year ago in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get back to you on that.
But we can dig through the files on that and give you a call later.
Okay. How about the Alpha question?
Alpha AXP revenue growth.
The Alpha AXP revenue growth, as we pointed out, was overall 138% growth on a year-over-year basis, and relative to quarter four, was down seasonally, somewhat in line with the overall reduction of the company's revenue.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, in the 15 to 20% range.
Okay.
That seasonal decline, Liz, affects basically every element of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Lori, may I have the next question, please?
Louise Kehoe from San Mateo, California. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, it's Louise Kehoe, Financial Times. You mentioned that you were behind in terms of job cuts in, I think you said, a couple of major countries. Can you tell us which ones they are and why that situation is there?
Well, I don't think that there's anything to be gained by being too specific in terms of what countries around the world were represented in my comment. I would say that the nature of the issues is that we underestimated the discussions and negotiations that are required with unions in these two particular countries.
In Europe?
Yes, ma'am. Next question, please.
Jennifer Gorin from Boston, Massachusetts. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, I'm sorry. I had a little bit of a glitch on my tape recorder, and I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about why you think this is good news, just the very beginning.
Okay. I'm not sure specifically what point you're referring to, but there are six or eight major elements of good news in the quarter. And let me just take a half a minute to a minute and briefly go through each of them. First of all, the company exceeded its plan in virtually every respect for the first quarter. And the key elements of exceeding its plan would relate to cash, profit, and revenue growth, or market share, if you will. Secondly, Bob Palmer pointed out earlier, we've had three consecutive quarters of order growth rate in the products arena. This is obviously what drives the company in many respects, and is one of the most significant positive signs, particularly in the Alpha AXP arena, where the growth rate was on the order of 138%. Thirdly, the service business is stabilizing. Last year, we had declines in the service business, the quarter one performance is showing some encouraging signs that those declines have stabilized or are stabilizing. Fourthly, after several years of declining gross margins, the company is reporting in quarter one a stable situation, in fact, a modest improvement in gross margins. This is particularly encouraging in that it comes in the face of our seasonally low revenues. So while revenues are down 20%, as they normally are from quarter four to quarter one, again, that's a seasonal factor in our business, you would generally expect gross margins to be down 2 or 3 points. In quarter one, on the other hand, they actually improved. A very, very significant point that we're encouraged by. A fifth point is expenses are both down and on plan. And a sixth point is that the loss level showed a solid 20% improvement or reduction. And again, that was in the face of a 20% decline in revenue from the fourth quarter. And finally, I would say that our cash level remains strong and that we remain confident that we can fund and finance the company's restructuring requirements moving forward. And just one last point is that the products and services of the company in virtually every respect are doing quite well and growing.
Thank you very much.
Gary McWilliams from Boston, Massachusetts, please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to get some updates on two areas. One is the hiring of the general managers within the product management divisions, I think they're called PMDs. When do you expect to complete those? And secondly, is there an update on what's happening with the Hudson plant sale or partnership? Anything happening there?
On the first question, some of these appointments in the PM&D area, as you called it, have been made. We are actively recruiting for the others, both internally and in some cases externally. And we expect in the next couple of months that to be concluded. Relative to the semiconductor operation, let me briefly repeat something that we've shared in previous teleconferences. Our objective in the semiconductor operation is to improve our capacity utilization. We have basically two large fabrication facilities, one in South Queensbury, Scotland, which is doing quite well. That particular unit is benefiting from our alliance with AMD, such that we're building product for AMD and have recently moved to basically a break-even position in that operation, and we're quite encouraged by that program. Relative to the other fabrication facility that's here in Hudson, Massachusetts, that unit comes online in the next couple of months. The company is engaged with a number of other companies to attempt to pursue avenues to improve the utilization of that facility once it comes on stream. It's premature at this point to estimate what the impact will be, or when we'll see it, or who we'll be partnered up with. But the model will be similar to the model that we've successfully deployed in Scotland. Next question, please.
Joanna Bean from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, could you please talk a little bit about the gains that you've made in expunging matrix management and how that's played out, how you're running things differently now versus then?
Yes, I could give you a brief description. We previously at Digital had operated in largely a functional manner. That is, we had a very large engineering function, a large manufacturing function, and a large worldwide sales and marketing function. And the way the company operated was that it required a lot of interfaces between each of those functions in order to correlate between customer needs, the manufacturing build, the engineering features, and so forth, and it was cumbersome. I think it was very effective when the company was smaller, but as the company grew and does business in 100 countries, when you try to operate in that very functional way with a many-dimensional matrix, it makes it very slow to respond to market requirements and changes, and so you have both an excessive cost due to the numbers of people that are required in the matrix, and you have a lack of agility and responsiveness to customers' changing requirements. In the 1990s, the nature of the industry has changed so dramatically that it is extremely important that we be able to respond swiftly to changing customer needs, get them the products that they need with the features they need, and do it more rapidly than we were previously able to do. Also, in the large functional organization that's connected by matrices, it's virtually impossible to have an accurate accounting of where you are making your profits and how your investments return by product, by geography, by any number of different dimensions, because there's so much allocation in that model that it overwhelms, really, the line items. So the new model is one where each business unit has within its own control the marketing, that is the needs of customers, the engineering of products to meet those needs, the advertising and sales to deliver those to the marketplace, the manufacturing necessary, and they have all of the elements of cost within their business. And for the first time in Digital's history, they also are being measured on the assets and the cost of those assets within the business unit. So they really are like independent businessmen in one sense, and that they have visibility to all of the elements of the P&L. Because of that, it's also quite easy for me then to measure accountability within my direct report organization. And I can see where our shareholders are investing in new areas. What is the return on those investments? How to make decisions about where to increase investments and where to cut back. None of this was easy to do, if at all possible, in the functional matrix organization. Many companies in the business, competitors, have long wondered how Digital could ever have employed so many people in doing a similar business. And the answer is really because of that functional matrix organization. As we continue to eliminate it, we're seeing that our time to market is getting shorter. We're much more responsive to customer needs. Our clarity around where we're making the investments and the return is now quite good. The management is accountable. And we're also, of course, dramatically reducing costs as we eliminate the overhead structure on a worldwide basis.
So would you say that you've completed that transition, or you're partway through, or you're just beginning, or where are you?
We're well into it. I would say that we're on the order of halfway through the transition. It depends on which element of it you'd be talking about, because in some cases we've completed, some cases we haven't, but we're about halfway. It's going to take the rest of this fiscal year to complete the transition to the new model, and there'll be undoubtedly, as you go forward, in the nature of the industry is very fluid, there'll be some puts and takes and changes as we get smarter and learn how to make our operations more efficient. But I'm very encouraged about the results so far and the fact that we are on or ahead of plan in virtually every element.
Lori, could we have the next question, please?
Rob Jones from London, please go with your question.
Hi there. I'd like to know what kind of marketing strategy you're going to have in the UK. And also, you said
on a worldwide basis, we're going to have a much more aggressive marketing strategy. And by that, I mean that our advertising is going to become much more focused and clearer. You probably recall that Digital had run an extensive process to reduce the number of advertising agencies that we have been using from a rather large number in excess of 30 or 40 for agencies around the world to really a primary agency for all of our systems other than PCs, and to continue with the agency we had in place for PCs, which has been quite successful. We ran an extensive process. We settled on DDB Needham, which is an excellent worldwide firm. You have not yet seen the advertising that will result from that selection, but you'll be seeing it shortly. It will be more aggressive, more direct, and calling attention to Digital's products and services from the customer's perspective. Very often in our business, Digital as well as our competitors tend to focus on the attributes as we see them largely from an engineering perspective. Would like to
Certainly we'll continue some of that, but would like to balance that with a focus on what is the value to the customer of these products and services, and look at it somewhat differently.
Okay, thank you.
Brad Day from Framingham, Massachusetts, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, hi, Mr. Palmer. This question is for you. I'm very curious about the race in terms of moving towards the indirect channel model, and I would assume that a lot of that practice and pilot format has already come out of the experience of the PCBU when it was run by Enrico. But moving forward, there was a comment earlier that the percentage of total revenue indirect in this quarter was 57%, I think, versus 45% of last year. By the year end, how do you think that split will pan out? Will it be dramatically increased to maybe a 65-35, or how will that work?
Well, our plan called for over the year transitioning to about a 63% of the product revenues through indirect channels, and it would appear from the data this quarter. Of course, there's only one quarter's worth of data, but it would appear that we're on track to achieve that objective. This transition digital's having to make in the last 2 years since I've been CEO is more difficult for us because we were quite late in beginning. Our competitors started really in the late 1980s, in the middle 1980s, in developing these channels, and they've been benefiting as a result because the cost structure of the channels is quite less than the cost structure of the direct sales force. And so we're playing catch-up with respect to our competitors. On the other hand, I'm encouraged by the progress that we're making. As you noted, an average of 45% last year, 57% in the quarter just ended. 2 years ago when I took on the job, it's 33%. So we've gone from 33% to 57%, and I think that's quite significant progress. Importantly, we're reaching additional customers. One of the major objectives of this program is not only to service the traditional customer base that we have been talking about, but also to reach new customers that we previously were not covering with a direct or an indirect sales force. And that's a very important part of our strategy going forward.
Okay, as a follow-on to that, kind of as a B part of this question, then I would assume in your pursuit of that percentage split that there could be a dramatic play in further reductions in the SG&A expense line in particular, not just the S as part of moving to indirect selling, but also in the G&A support of that S.
That's correct. We have a timeless model, you might say, going forward that we're working toward, and it would bring digital into a competitive balance with everybody else in the industry with similar products and services. For us, that means a total SG&A below 20% and a research and investment level that's more in the 7-8% range so that you can have an acceptable profit margin after tax, and that's what we're working on. We're making good progress, but your observations are correct.
Thank you very much.
John Wilkie from Boston, Massachusetts, please go ahead with your follow-up question.
Hi. Then again, just to so that I can compare apples to apples, in the past I know you have a reported total employee population, regular and temporary. Today it looks like you're adopting the model that a lot of the rest of the industry uses of reporting just regular. But so that I can refer precisely back to previous totals, what is the total employee headcount today or at the quarter end?
John, let me make a couple of points before I answer that question specifically. We are no longer going to be reporting total population as you had just requested. The industry, in fact, all of our competitors report regular or permanent, if you would, full-time regular employees when they report populations. So we have found that it has added confusion in the analyst community in particular as they compare our company to others and do some of the metric computations, for example, revenue employee and so on. So we, this past year, you may have noticed that we began reporting both regular employees or permanents as well as other, which is essentially temporaries, quarter by quarter over the course of this past fiscal year. and our goal was to have that as a transition year, and beginning this quarter, start reporting it. The second point I'd make is that it's expensive. The temporary help is kind of dynamic, and it's quite expensive administratively to try to keep track of these people that tend to come and go quite often. So in the future, you will not be seeing that from the company. Now back to your question. As far as I know, and again, I don't have the exact numbers, but as far as I know, the quarter one level of temporaries is approximately equivalent to quarter four, which is roughly 5,000, if I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So just to be internally consistent to my own past reporting, 73.8, which would be about 78.8 with that footnote, or with that caveat.
Plus or minus, I think that's correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Suzanne Cosgrove from New York, please go ahead with the question.
Yes. Hi. This is also in regards to the layoffs and the profitability. You mentioned that you would like to see a return to profitability, I think, by the beginning of the next fiscal year. Is that correct?
Well, what I'm saying is that we have an internal goal to achieve break-even from operations at mm-hmm. the end of the second quarter. That's the quarter that we're currently in. Said that although that's our internal goal and we're working very hard to accomplish it, we don't forecast when we'll actually achieve it. And frankly, the analysts have been, I think, appropriately conservative in saying that they really don't expect Digital to return to profitability until Q4 of our fiscal year, which would be at the end of June of calendar year 95.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working, and everybody in Digital is working, to achieve that objective of profitability ahead of that schedule.
By the end of this current quarter.
Yeah, by the end of the current quarter. But again, I've been quite clear. I'm saying to achieve break-even from operations. And that's the thing that we've been focused on. So we're continuing to be focused on it. But there's no assurance and there's no forecast from the company that will actually achieve that objective. I did state that I'm quite confident that during the fiscal year, given the good track that we're on and the management team we have in place, that we will achieve profitability at some time.
How do you intend to do that? Is it partly from staff reductions and cost cutting, or is it just the whole ball of wax?
Well, it's a very complicated dynamic, and it is in every element of the P&L. We're working on improving by reducing the cost and improving by increasing the revenues. I mean, we've got a multitude of programs in all dimensions, as you might imagine. It's quite complicated, but there's virtually no line item anywhere that's not getting scrutiny and looked at for productivity improvements, and they're having an effect, as you can plainly see.
The layoffs, again, the additional layoffs are some 15,000 seen by the end of the fiscal year, is that correct? So by the end?
I would think that at the end of our fiscal year in June, you'd be seeing a total regular employee population of Digital slightly below 60,000 employees worldwide.
Okay.
When I started on this activity, that corresponding number was approximately 115,000 mm-hmm. 2 years ago. So it's been just 2 years since I took on the role as chief executive officer. It happened October the 1st, 1992. In those 2 years, we're down about 40,000 regular employees.
Okay, thank you very much.
Terry Shannon from Ashland, Massachusetts, please go ahead with your question.
Okay, thank you. Given the still extended lead times for DEC 2100 server products, and given the apparent lack of the traditional end-of-quarter fire sale this time around, it would seem that Digital already has a pretty comfortable backlog of bookings and strong demand for products this quarter. Can you offer any comment on this?
Yeah, Terry, this is Bob Palmer. Actually, we have caught up now with our manufacturing capability for the unexpectedly good demand for our 2100, and the delivery times are on the nature of 2 weeks. So please send us an order. We'll be glad to fill it. In addition to that, though, in terms of the backlog, it seems like every quarter there's a little less backlog as a percent of the plan than you had the preceding quarter. And I think it just reflects the changing dynamics of the business. More and more of the business is on a turns basis. That makes it extraordinarily difficult for my friend Vin here to forecast how we're actually going to come out internally, because, again, you've got to receive and turn that business within the quarter. I think that's not terribly different for Digital than for our other competitors, however, that have similar products.
Okay, thank you.
Lori, we have time for about one or two more questions.
All right, thank you. Frank Romano from Boston, Massachusetts. Please go ahead with your question.
I have two questions, one for Bob and one for Vin. Bob, your question is, on July 26th, you went public saying that your goal was to attain profitability by the end of Q2 and sustainable profitability by the end of the fiscal year. If that is still your goal, would you please say so? If not, would you please tell me what the revised goal is?
I tried to be clear, but that is still my goal. It hadn't been any change in my goal whatsoever.
Okay, so you're still looking for profitability by the end of Q2 and sustained profitability by the end of Q4.
My goal is to achieve profitability in Q2 and sustain profitability as soon as we achieve it.
Okay.
But, so I'd like to do even better than what you've just stated, but the reality is I haven't made any change to the goal statement that I've made previously.
Okay, thank you. Vin, my question for you is on the operating results for the first quarter ended. There's a line that says loss per common share, cumulative effect of change in accounting principle, before the cumulative change in accounting principle. Last year, the loss was 76 cents per share, and this year it was $1.44 per share. What is to lead me to the conclusion that excluding the accounting, the effect of accounting changes, that the corporation just didn't almost double their loss per common share?
The answer would be yes if you exclude accounting changes. However, as I pointed out earlier, and we also pointed out in the release, we have also another significant one-time event in the first quarter,
mm-hmm.
and that's basically the difference. The accounting change. This question was asked earlier relative to quarter one a year ago, was in support of the post-employment benefit changes. The change that you referred to, as well as an earlier caller.
Okay, thank you.
Lori, I think we'll have to stop now. I'd just like to remind people who are still on the call, if they have follow-up questions that regard the numbers and the financials, that they should get in touch with Dan Cafferly at 508-493-7182. If you have questions about transition, population numbers, you can call me at 508-493-6369. Thank you all for joining us.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's conclude our conference for today. You may all disconnect, and thank you for participating.